Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the stations you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us tonight Mr. John Daniels. I always look forward to our conversations because, of course, Mr. Daniels has written one of the most important books ever written on the Masonic movement. It's called Scarlet and the Beast. It's three volumes, and we carry the second and third volumes. We don't carry the first one because it's out of print, but I understand it's going to be in print again next year. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right, fine. Well, I'm so glad you're putting it back because we've had so many requests for it, and it's really one of the more insightful books. And, of course, the average individual out across America really has no idea why America is in the crisis it is. I mean, why did the Supreme Court take God out of our schools? Why is the moral fabric of our society in decline? Why is it that sometimes we'll have criminal trials and a man who is obviously guilty of a crime will get off, and other times there's a serious question as to why somebody would be convicted? Can you have a just society when you have a secret society operating within your community where people are sworn to release somebody if they're a member of the Brotherhood, of the secret Brotherhood? And, of course, as far as why they took God out of our schools, what you must understand is that for a period of 30 years, between 1941 and 1971, members of the Brotherhood controlled the Supreme Court of the United States. And during those years, they took God and prayer out of the schools. They were in control of the Supreme Court of the United States by majorities of 5-4, and at times even 8-1. And yet the fact that most Americans have never heard that is simply a reflection of the degree of control that today exists over so much of what the American people think and believe. Mr. Daniels, how did you get involved in your study of Masonry?
When I started college in the early 70s, a book crossed my path, Why Dare Call It Conspiracy. And I read that book, and it made a lot of sense. And I'm a student of the Bible, and I understood things must happen in the end days according to Scripture. And this book seemed to talk about a conspiracy that coincided with what Scripture said. And that's where I started studying. And I studied for 10 years, and then started putting my notes together and finished the book 10 years later. So it was a project that lasted from 1972 until 1992.
Well, of course, the book, Don't Dare Call It Conspiracy, was a great book. I think it touched many people's lives. But it totally missed the conspiracy you were talking about.
And yes, it did.
And I suppose I shouldn't be critical because I read the book and I had studied these things for many years, and it wasn't really until the early 80s that I began to realize the spiritual component of what was going on. And indeed, of course, the fact that the conspiracy that Gary Allen wrote about in his book, None Dare Call It Conspiracy, this conspiracy that involved Rhodes and Milner, and eventually came to America to create the Council on Foreign Relations, was actually, of course, in part an occult conspiracy because both Milner and Rhodes were deeply involved in Masonry.
Right.
And, of course, this then takes you not in simply into Masonry, but into this whole plethora of occult organizations. But, of course, your Scarlet and the Beast primarily zeroes in on Masonry, which is the largest single cult in the United States, and yet the church in America will never speak out against it.
Right. And the reason being is after our Civil War, they put into effect the plan to infiltrate the church, and the order went out January 1926 for every Mason to join the church and liberalize it and modernize it for Masonic use.
And, of course, we know that they had certainly infiltrated the Southern Baptist Convention, the Southern Baptist seminaries, seminaries of every part of the Christendom. They'd certainly infiltrated even the Catholic Church, traditionally the enemies of Masonry, and yet, of course, there are certainly lodges working right within the Vatican itself today. And yet, of course, the people wonder why the Catholic Church is having as many problems as it is. Well, now, you have some fascinating material about the various branches within Masonry and the conflict between the British Masonry and French Masonry. Why don't you sort of develop that? Because we have a lot of listeners here, especially up in the American Christian Network, who probably never heard your views on this conflict between English and French Masonry.
It goes all the way back, really, to about 496 A.D., and an order calling itself the Priory of Zion, spelled S-I-O-N, which is a French spelling, began to bud. And eventually, within the next 300 years, they controlled the thrones of Europe. They claimed to be Jewish, but they were not Jewish. It was a counterfeit group, from what I could tell. And they decided to conquer the Holy Land at the turn of the first millennium, and they founded the Knights Templar. And the Knights Templar get their name because they quartered on the Temple Mount when they conquered Jerusalem. Well, the Templars became wealthy. Some say they found Solomon's gold. Some say they traded and the pilgrims going to Jerusalem, they became wealthy that way, but there became conflict between the Priory of Zion and the Knights Templar. And by the 13th century, turn of the 14th century, the kings of Europe, which were put on the throne by the Priory of Zion, started persecuting the Templars. And the Templars fled to Scotland. A couple hundred years later, in the 1600s, when first Queen Elizabeth, childless, was near death, she appointed the Stuart, King James Stuart, to be king over the United Kingdom, which would be the two kingdoms when they got together.
And then, England and Scotland, you mean?
Yes.
Right.
And then he came down with his Templars into England, and they stayed in York, England. That was their first place they stayed, and they infiltrated the lodges there, and Knights Templars became part of what is now Freemasonry. And
now, of course, this was in the 1600s.
This was in the 1600s, and then the Stuarts were kicked off the throne through a civil war in England. And they were then sent in exile in 1714 to France. And they started Templar Freemasonry. They infiltrated the French lodges there, started Templar Freemasonry, and then England started the Zionist Freemasonry, which is Rosicrucian. So then we have the two conflicts between Templar and English Freemasonry. English Freemasonry was deistic, and French Freemasonry became atheistic.
And now that would become then the lodges of the Grand Orient, which is
the Grand Orient.
Right, okay.
And eventually started communism. And so you see the world divided between these two Freemasonries for the past 200 years, East and West.
And I think for our listeners who don't know who the Templars are, they were really the central bankers of Europe after the fall of Jerusalem to the Muslims. They returned to Europe, and I think some of them were on Crete, as I remember, or Malta. But they really became the richest people on the continent. And, of course, they were eventually attacked, and the leader of the French, pardon me, of the Templars, was a man named Jacques de Molay, which is why today the sons of Masons join the de Molay clubs all across America. And, of course, they trace their origin to Jacques de Molay. And, of course, de Molay was killed, at least he was charged at the time, for being part of a Luciferian organization. And have you gone at all into the Luciferian influence within within the Templars?
Yes, that started with Adam Weishaupt, who was a professor at Ingolstadt University in Germany. In the mid-1700s, and he taught his students this theory that he had, and the students, when they graduated, he started an organization called the Perfectibles, which ended up becoming the Illuminati, and the Illuminati, or Perfectibles, was created long before the founding by the Illuminati name in 1776, May 1st. And the Illuminati is what infiltrated French Freemasonry and brought about the French Revolution. And they were terrorists, just like Osama bin Laden's terrorists. Weishaupt set up his structure in a pyramid structure. They had cells, 3 to 5 men in each cell, and they only knew the people within their cells, but it kind of built into a pyramid structure where Weishaupt was up top and his two sidekicks. And Osama bin Laden set his Taliban up in the same way, and as were the Perfectibles students, Taliban mean students. And so Osama bin Laden's structure was set up identical to the Illuminati.
Well, okay, that's really the Al-Qaeda you're talking about more,
right,
than the Taliban.
Well, the Taliban means students.
Right.
That's those are the gophers in the group. But the Al-Qaeda was a pyramid structure. But Taliban, it starts with students.
Right.
And he builds his cells with that.
Well, the question now, of course, certainly Weishaupt, who established the Illuminati, actually, of course, had contact with some of the people from the mystery religions of antiquity, these strange people tied into the occult. Wasn't it really the occult influence within the Illuminati that made it so successful?
Absolutely. Anytime you get into anything secret, that's what makes it successful. But all the Eastern religions were what we call today secret societies. They were built on that structure, else they would be overthrown by the kings of the nations that they lived under. And so they did go underground millenniums ago. And so Weishaupt just modernized it.
And, of course, it was based upon this this structure, first of all, of the Illuminati, and then the infiltration of European Masonry, that you had then the cadre that carried out not only the French Revolution, but a series of revolutions that followed. Isn't that true? Wasn't there just not the French Revolution in 1789, but revolution after revolution, not only in France, but in Germany and elsewhere, or
yes,
across the continent?
Yeah, the next revolution was in Italy after the French Revolution, and Joseph Mazzini was head over that. And he set up his structure identical to Adam Weishaupt. And he started an organization called Propaganda One. And that was, P1 infiltrated the Masonic Lodge in Italy and it was a terrorist organization. And there's a modern propaganda lodge in Italy that was founded in the 1960s, and it's called P2, structured identical to Joseph Mazzini. And P2 started terrorist activity throughout Europe to try to get governments to change into communism. And so we have the same thing today, the same structure today in Europe in the 1980s, when Europe was plagued by these assassinations and terrorist activity. And Osama bin Laden just patterned his organization identical to that. That's why he got away with it so long and being secret, and all of a sudden it comes out and we're attacked.
Well, you know, it's really really very interesting as you study the background. And for our listeners out there, if you, of course, you can't get Volume 1 of Scarlet and the Beast. You can get Volumes 2 and 3. But if you'd like to know the relationship between the Masonic movement and the revolutions that plagued Europe all during the 19th century and led up eventually to the Russian Revolution, there's a wonderful book written not certainly by a conservative or even anybody would be considered a Christian, but by James H. Billington, Librarian of Congress, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, one of the leading elitists or intellectuals of our time. His book, Fire in the Mind of Men, is required reading because it really points out the relationship between this occult movement and the World Revolutionary Movement. Are you acquainted with Dr. Billington's work?
Yes, I am. I never did. His book is very difficult to find. I never did find it. But he taught his students. He was a professor and taught his students on this very fact of what caused the revolutions across the world, and he attributed all to Freemasonry.
Actually, we carry the book. It is very hard to
get. Great, I want to get a copy of it.
All right. We'll work out a trade or something when your book gets out, we can talk about that off the air. It's a very, very important book. But these are also important, and these are things you're not going to hear discussed, and certainly you're never going to learn about this in university unless, of course, you are taught by one of the intellectual elite, like Dr. Billington, a brilliant, brilliant man. But, of course, he understands that there really always have been secret societies and, of course, their impact on modern-day America. But the average American certainly has never told any of these things, and without knowledge, of course, you have no way of addressing the problem. So we basically have then these two groups of masonry. We have the French masonry, which is atheistic. We have the English the masonry, which is Rosicrucian. And, of course, if you study the rites of modern-day masonry, they have both degrees for Rosicrucians. They have, or degrees, they call it a Rosy Cross, and then they have the Templar degrees. Now, basically, what is the difference as far as their impact on society and their impact upon the United States?
Well, the New Age movement in the United States today, which is all your green societies, all those that are trying to save the world by saving the plants and so forth and so on, that is Rosicrucian. And they come out of the English Freemasonry. And they have infiltrated our society so that it just ties the hands of our government to get anything done.
And of course, would that be the Royal Arch branch of Masonry in contrast to the Scottish Rite?
It's very difficult to determine that, and let me tell you why. Both branches of Freemasonry are mixed with both Rosicrucian and Templar degrees today. And as a basic truth, what you said is correct. But you have the Royal Arch, yes, is Rosicrucian, but the Royal Arch is also in Templar Freemasonry.
Well, perhaps back in the 1700s a more clear distinction than it is today?
Yes, absolutely, yes. In fact, our whole revolution in the United States was Templar. And yet, although it was Templar, it was the Royal Arch degree in Templar Freemasonry that protected our founding fathers during the Civil War, when the British, any of the Royal Arch degree Masons in the British Army, if you give the proper sign, then by Masonic law, you are not to kill that individual. And so,
was that the hailing sign or what?
Yes, the grand hailing sign.
And of course, I think our listeners have to understand that these things have existed for hundreds of years in America. And of course, if a brother gives you the sign and you're in court, you're the judge, you're going to let him go, no matter what horrible crime he has committed. And of course, certainly in battle, the whole idea was you certainly wanted a little protection when you're going to go into battle. And if you were going to be set upon by the British and you gave the hailing sign, if the officer in charge was a Mason, he would let you go. He would not have you killed.
The interesting thing about our Civil War is the fact that preceding our Civil War, the Masonic Lodge was just about destroyed. The United States.
That was, of course, after it was exposed,
right,
that actually it killed some people for breaking the Masonic oaths and revealing the secrets of Freemasonry. And so there was even an anti-Masonic party, and everybody knew about Masonry at that time. Of course, that was quickly forgotten when the war came on. And what was it? They certainly wanted to get back in the lodge because they felt maybe that would mean the people on the other side wouldn't kill them?
Well, the interesting thing is that the Masonic Lodge offered the northern jurisdiction or offered the North and the South both their lodges as recruiting depots for the war. Now, when the war started, there were only about 5,000 Masons in the United States. And by the end of the war, there was 500,000. So they used those lodges as recruitment centers for the war on both sides, and mainly to build back Freemasonry. And by the turn of the 20th century, then there was about 900,000 Masons in the United States. So we're talking about the anti-Masonic movement following 1826, destroying Freemasonry almost in the United States, to less than a century later, 800,000 Masons. So they built that through Civil War.
All right.
We document in Volume 3 of Scarlet and the Beast that our Civil War was started by Freemasonry.
Well, certainly we know that there were very, very powerful Masons on both sides.
Right.
Now, why do you say that the Freemasonry started the Civil War?
Well, I go into the diplomacy in England. Most of our diplomats during the 1850s were Masons that were sent abroad. And there was complicity between the European Masons and the Masons in the United States to start a war specifically to build the Masonic Lodge again in the United States. Our nation was founded by Freemasonry, and it was imperative to save Freemasonry in this country. So we deal with that in Volume 3 of Scarlet and the Beast. I think it's in Chapter 4 or 5.
All right, fine. Well, it's an amazing thing, of course, when you begin getting into the influence of Masonry. You'll find so many of our judges are Masons, so many of our politicians are Masons, so many people within the hierarchy of our society, in industry and banking, they're all Masons, they're all part of the Brotherhood, they all work with one another, they have all sworn these horrible oaths in search of the light. And I think that probably an awful lot of Masons are good people. They don't understand the significance of the oaths they've sworn. They do not understand what the light is. Would you think that would be true?
Right. They're deceived. Satan is the great deceiver, and he has his religion, and it was all the pagan religions of old. And he deceived them in their secret chambers all the way up until today. And so part of that secrecy is to take a blood oath that we will not divulge what we do because it is against a civil society.
And, of course, it is truly a conspiracy within our society to transform America from a Christian nation into a secular nation, and then, of course, into this new world order with a new religion, which will be the worship not of the God of the Bible, but of the God that the Masons worship, and at least the inner circle of Masonry understands what this is about. In fact, in the writings of Manly P. Hall, Lectures in Ancient Philosophy, which I quote in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, he talks about how Masonry is a fraternity within a fraternity. You have to understand, Hall was one of the highest ranking Masons in America. And when he died, he was cited within their magazines as the leading Masonic philosopher of all time. And he talks about the fraternity within a fraternity and out of fraternity, where men, of course, have a good time and do good. But an inner fraternity of men dedicated to the study of the Arcanum and Canorum, which, of course, is the secret and the secret of secrets. And what is that most important of the secrets that they learn at the upper echelons of Masonry, echelons which the average Mason doesn't even know exists?
Well, in one of the books that he wrote, he says, even the first-degree Mason learns that when he takes his oath, he learns that the seething energies of Lucifer are at his side. Now, that's his words. That's Manly P. Hall's words. The seething energy of Lucifer.
But I don't think that's, of course, the keys of Freemasonry is the book
right.
You're referring to. The average Mason doesn't understand that. I mean, the average Masonry doesn't read these books very closely. They're difficult to read, and unless you really understand what they're saying, it'll go right over your head.
Right. And every Masonic lodge has a library, and they can go in and read those books. But as you say, they just don't do it. And I've talked to Masons, and they say, well, I've never read those books, so I don't really know that, and I don't really believe it says that.
And I certainly don't want to believe that I'm in a Luciferian organization.
Yeah. Most of them join today for the benefits that it gives them in getting a job, getting loans, and that type of thing. If you look many of the large corporations in the United States, their founders actually were Masons. Now, it doesn't say that they didn't have the ability in building these major corporations. It's just that they had their foot in the door to the bank or whatever it was needed in politics to go forward and build their empires that really built this nation.
And that, of course, will have Cecil Rhodes, for whom Rhodesia is named, and the man who created De Beers, Diamonds, and Anglo-American,
precisely,
was able to get his money because he was part of the Brotherhood, and he was then able to get massive loans from Lord Rothschild and Abe Bailey and Albert Beit. And with that money, he bought up the diamond mines of South Africa, he bought up the gold mines of South Africa, and established both the diamond and gold empires, which today finances the Rhodes scholarships and, of course, the move towards the New World Order and the New World Religion, and that most people don't understand that.
And something else people don't understand is that there has to be an undercurrent of trade to create this wealth to build the world they want it the way they want it built. And it's interesting to note that English Freemasonry is the one that built all the banks in the Far East to fund the drug movement, the movement of the drugs. And the opium farmers today do not sell any of their drugs except for a hard currency like diamonds and gold. And so this is the reason Great Britain went into the gold trade and gold mining in South Africa, strictly to fund the drug movement that funded the revolutions.
And I think that most people must understand that England started the shipping of opium throughout the world. The opium wars were not fought to stop the trade in opium. It was to open up the opium trade in China so that it could be exploited by the Great Britain.
Right.
And today, of course, our intelligence agencies are deeply involved in drug smuggling. That's how the drugs are able. I mean, if we were fighting a war against drugs, we would have won it a long time ago. Our intelligence agency, specifically the CIA, is deeply involved in smuggling drugs in to corrupt the youth of our nation, of course, specifically the black and the Hispanic, and more important, of course, to raise funds for their dark operations. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan and our guest this evening, John Daniels, and we're talking about something which you're very seldom going to hear discussed on the radio today, and yet, of course, American masonry, worldwide masonry, is one of the foundations of this whole world occult movement that is moving us towards the world, towards destruction. And, of course, we have much material. If you're interested in perhaps getting a copy of our catalog and learning more about the various material which is available on this field, and we have a great deal of it, can tell you how to get a great deal of the information, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you go to my website, radioliberty.com, and go into some of the newsletters that we wrote several years ago, of course, we go into great detail into masonry and this whole world occult movement and Manly P. Hall, who we just mentioned, who, of course, when he died, was cited as the world's greatest mason. He was also a Satanist, and you get my interviews with Bill Snevelin. He will tell you that Manly Hall, of course, not only appeared to him in physical form, but as an apparition, and was the man who introduced him into the inner circles of the upper echelons of world masonry, which, of course, was Satanism itself. Could such things be going on in the world today when many of our presidents have been Masons? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there are. If you'd like to get some of my interviews with John Daniels in the past, and John is one of the best informed people in the country, you can just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and get more information. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there want to join the Radio Liberty family to help us get this sort of information out across America. Because remember, we're actually up to almost 50 stations now. We've taken on an additional 17 stations, really on faith, hoping that we're going to be able to raise the funds from people who believe in what we're doing. Because if the American people don't understand the spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged, then America, as a free society, will cease to exist. And we're moving today, both from a financial point of view and with this war in Iraq, which, of course, is a totally unjust war. I mean, Saddam Hussein is a wicked man, but remember, we kept him in power all during the 1980s. We kept him in power after the Gulf War. We intentionally left him in power. And now, of course, we're moving in there. And how many Iraqi citizens, how many Americans are going to die? And what's our justification? Well, it's got to be a preemptive strike because he has chemical and biological weapons. So does Fidel Castro. So does Putin. So do the Chinese communists. Should we go to war with all of them? Of course, Saddam Hussein does not threaten America. But, of course, if we go to war with Iraq, I can promise you that there is going to be revolutionary activity in this country. There are Islamic sleeper cells that have been kept here for many years. And, of course, I fear for my country and for the future of this nation if we go to war, because I think that they're already planning on chaos in our streets. That's why our military are undertaking urban guerrilla warfare training, because they anticipate urban disturbances. That's why they're setting up camps across America. That's why we already have on the books the ability to arrest American citizens and put them into concentration camps. But anyway, if you'd like to get in touch with us, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And with us this evening is our special guest. His name is John Daniel, and he's certainly one of the best informed people as far as what's going on. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and we have Lorraine calling in from San Diego. Lorraine, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I have a question. I just have two questions about these orders. I had heard on a radio show that Martin Luther was a Rosicrucian. It started out like in a Rosy Cross, and they're like a mystical thing. And I was wondering how true that was.
All right, fine. Let's take one question at a time. Do you know anything about Martin Luther and the Rosicrucians?
I have heard that, but I have not been able to put my hands on it. What I heard was that he himself was not a Rosicrucian, but he was protected by the Rosicrucians.
All right. So.
Yeah, and we find a lot of the people that came out of the Catholic Church protected by the Rosicrucians.
Okay.
Of course, what a great deal it is. Now you've got two branches of Christendom, and you can play one against the other.
Right.
And that's exactly what they do, Lorraine. Anything else?
Okay, because I heard he was in it from, I think it was Traviata magazine. And then.
But can you document it from any legitimate source other than somebody's writings?
I don't think I could find it on the Internet. I didn't, so I don't know. That's why I was still asking about it. And then what about the Order of St. John? What do you know about them?
What do you know about the Order of St. John?
The Order of St. John is really an offshoot of the Templars. And however, they have leanings in Rosicrucianism. There's a mixture there. It's very difficult to divide that. And I've done some research on it and have not been successful in finding that out.
All right, thank you.
And Lorraine, don't believe everything you see on the Internet. Always check it out. Try to get to an original source.
Oh, I know.
Some of the things they say on the Internet about me have no basis at all. In fact, if you look me up on some of them, they will tell you that we are paid by the CIA. Because Radio Liberty is owned by the CIA. Let's really try, but that's true, but that's a different Radio Liberty.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot.
So, do the research yourself. But fortunately, Mr. Daniel has done an awful lot of research, and of course we can learn from it. And extensive information, and I think, of course, the index. I keep a copy of Scarlet and the Beast closed, so I can always go through those index and find out who is, of course, a Mason and what degree of Masonry they were at. Okay, anything else, Lorraine?
That's it. Have a nice evening. Bye-bye.
And you too. Bye-bye. Okay, that was Lorraine calling us from Southern California, from San Diego. And if you're out there across America, you have a question or comment for John, why, give us a call. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you're here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Now, you talk about Rosicrucians, and you separate them from Masonry. What's the difference between the Rosicrucians and Masonry?
Well, Masonry is nothing more than the old working man guilds, the original Masonry, the old working man guilds in Europe that built the Catholic churches and the cathedral the castles of the kings of Europe in England. And it was both Rosicrucian and the Templars that infiltrated these Masonic lodges, which when they infiltrated them, they already had 3 degrees of working men. They had your apprentice Mason. Then they moved on up and the degrees until they became a master Mason. And so when Freemasonry, both the Rosicrucians and the Templars, when they infiltrated the lodges, they just attached their rituals to the first 3 degrees of the working man lodges. And so this is why you have the mixture. And really, Masons today say there's only one Masonry. Well, there's actually two, and one is atheistic and one is pantheistic.
Okay, fine. We've got Jeannie calling us in from La Selva Beach. Hi, Jeannie. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. I have a question for your guest, John. What do you know about the Order of Malta?
The Order of Malta is Templar. When they were coming back from in one of their trips from the Holy Land, they landed on the island of Malta and kind of stayed there. So the altar or the Order of Malta is just a branch of Templarism.
The reason I ask, in El Salvador, as you drive past the U.S. Embassy, it is on the road called the Order of Malta Boulevard. Uh-huh. And as you go past the United States Embassy, there is a little park called the Plaza of the Order of Malta, and I thought that was interesting.
Yes, I knew of those, and it's probably connected to the founders of those nations, and they named those streets and buildings after that.
Okay, anything else, Jeannie?
No, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Reason I was chuckling as caller had called in and said, what is your opinion, John? And that is, how moral or ethical would it be for someone who knows the Masonic sign but is not a Mason to use it in front of a judge as a way to get a break?
That has happened, I'm sure.
I'm sure it has.
There is genuine documentation that Masons do that, and Masons do get off.
Right.
I used it accidentally once and got out of a ticket. I just simply threw up my hands. I gave the grand hailing sign, unaware that I was giving it, and the policeman looked at me kind of funny, and I raised my hands again. I said, "I'm frustrated." Now I could have, if I was thinking straight, I could have given the grand hailing words,
I didn't. About the widow's son?
Yes. Out there to help the widow's son?
Is there anybody out there to help the widow's son?
Yeah, throw up your hands. And he looked at me, he says, "Mr. Daniel, I'm not going to give you a ticket. Get out of here."
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, you really have to understand, in some ways it's funny, in some ways it's tragic, because there is no way to have an organized society with secret organizations where some people will be dealt with one way by the law and other people will not be dealt a different way. And the fact that the average person has no knowledge of these secret societies, and of course it's not just Masonry, the Rosicrucians, the Theosophists, there are many organizations out there that are secret, but certainly the Masons are the one that's easiest to document, and of course, certainly the single one of the most powerful organizations in our nation today. But what you have to understand is they all sort of interlock, don't they? In other words, the relationship between the Council on Foreign Relations and Masonry is not a clear and concise one, because isn't there a tremendous overlap?
Yes, there is, and when the Council on Foreign Relations was founded, the founders were Masons, and so it is just an offshoot, a political offshoot without the name of Freemasonry, where really the power behind it is the Lodge.
Amen to that. And of course, the Council on Foreign Relations was the American extension of Cecil Rhodes Secret Society, of course, Rhodes and Milner were Masons. And was Colonel House a Mason? Were you ever able to document anything on that?
I have evidence to that, but it's not the best evidence.
All right, and we've tried many times to document that. Certainly, Colonel House was the pivotal person in the Wilson administration, sort of like the current day Henry Kissinger. He was the man who worked behind the scenes, but he had almost supernatural power. He was able to actually control people's minds. It was the most amazing thing to read what was written back in those ancient times, back at the beginning of the 20th century, when Colonel House controlled the presidency of Woodrow Wilson, and of course had a tremendous impact even on Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
I do have evidence, just one documentation, that he got his 33rd degree in Houston, Texas, Colonel House.
Okay. We can perhaps talk about that some other time. It's an interesting, historical fact. There's no question that Colonel House was deeply involved in the occult, and he had tremendous power. But whether if he was a 33rd degree Mason would not in the least bit surprise me. So, now, of course, how does Masonry impact on the world we live in today?
Well, to give you one example, let's go back to Woodrow Wilson. Supposedly, Woodrow Wilson came up with the idea of the League of Nations in 1917, but I have documentation and the papers that the League of Nations was founded by French Freemasonry prior to World War I, for the express purpose to bring about their conspiracy following World War One. So Woodrow Wilson was only a stooge in the face of the world, supposedly to be the founder of the League of Nations or the concept of it.
Of course, Colonel House could plant ideas in people's minds, and they'd think they were their own ideas.
Sure.
They weren't at all. And if you've read my book, we simply quote what people said, and we're writing back, you know, in 1917 and 1918 about how Colonel House would come into the room and talk to you, and he'd leave, and suddenly this idea would come into your mind, and it'd be the greatest idea, and you'd begin to implement it, and then one day, and the exact word was, when you were cogitating, and you'd suddenly realize that idea had been implanted in your mind by Colonel House, and I'm sure that's what happened with Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, Wilson eventually realized how he had been manipulated, and he broke with House and would never again speak to him. But of course, the legacy of the First World War and the horror that was created and then perpetuated by America's involvement in that war. And the whole idea was to create a one world government. In fact, you know, I don't know if you've ever read the Kaiser's memoirs, Kaiser Wilhelm, but he says, you know, he was told that the First World War was planned by the Masons. Have you ever gone into that?
Oh, yes. I cover that both World War One and World War Two in Volume One of Scarlet and the Beast. And I do a slide presentation on that as well. In fact, I'll be speaking on that in Dallas September the 17th. It's Tuesday evening in Dallas. And I will be giving that slide presentation to that very issue.
Well, we may have some listeners down there in Texas listening in on the internet this evening. Is there a number that people could call to get information on your talk?
Yes, they can call 903-759-9667. That's Day Publishing, which will be sponsoring that particular seminar. It'll be about 2 hours.
That's 906-759-9667. If you're down in the Texas area and you'd like to hear Mr. Daniel speak, why, certainly he's one of the best informed people in the country, how all of these things begin to fit together. All the wars are contrived. The war that we're going into in Iraq is totally contrived. In fact, the justification, Donald Rumsfeld has come forward and said, well, we don't need justification. We've got to attack Saddam Hussein before he attacks us and let history determine whether it was right or not. How many boys are going to die because of that?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, remember, we backed Saddam Hussein. We financed Saddam Hussein. We kept him in power, and now we're going to send our boys over to kill him. And, of course, in the process, many of them will die themselves. And, of course, these people who have no really concern about anything or anyone other than their own power in this move towards world government. Now, what influence do we see within the current administration? Of course, unfortunately, we don't have any modern-day lists of Masonry. The last good list of Masons was the 10,000 famous Freemasons.
Right.
And, of course, you can't get a copy. At least I haven't been able to get a copy of that. I've been trying for years. And, of course, they just aren't available.
I have all four volumes.
Do you?
And it took me a long time to get a hold of them.
And, of course, you have to understand the Masons go out and burn these books, that they do not want this. Once it became known that the conservatives were getting them, why, they just disappeared. And last time I put a bid on it, I cut $200 or $300, I found out that I'd already been outbid.
Well, you asked the question about Skull and Bones, or at least the two George Bushes in their involvement in secret societies, and it is Skull and Bones. Both of them are members of it. It's from Yale University. It was founded in 1831 on the Yale campus, and both George Bushes are members of Skull and Bones.
As was the grandfather, Prescott Bush. In fact, there's
yes.
Six Bushes. We offer the full list of the membership list of the Skull and Bones going back to 1833 for anybody out there listening.
It's supposed to be York Right. Skull and Bones is supposed to be from the English side of the conspiracy.
It really is. I've never heard that before. So yeah. It's really almost Masonic then in its background.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they take the same blood-curdling oaths.
Do they really?
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea. Well, that's...
Yeah. In the early 1980s, there was a series of books that came out of that, and I had out about that, and I had those in my library.
All right, fine. Of course, there was Anthony Sutton's The Establishment.
That's the one that wrote the books.
Right, okay. He does a good job on that. And actually, of course, we got the list from the same people that he got his list from, but we published the entire list. He just alludes to it in his book. So anybody who's interested in knowing more about that, we'll be glad to give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, we do carry Volume 2 and Volume 3, and we're looking forward to Volume 1 of The Scarlet and the Beast, which we think is such a very, very important book. It's, what, about over 500 pages, isn't it?
It's nearly 1,000.
No, nearly 1,000 pages. Okay.
About 961 pages.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, but as far as the current influence, of you mentioned then that the Skull and Bones would have then a tremendous a Masonic influence on the current administration.
It does, but so does Freemasonry.
Right.
If you look at the now, it's very, very difficult. You got to understand, it's very, very difficult to find out who's a member currently. The researcher is about anywhere from 30 to 50 years behind in documenting this this evidence, but. The same backers of George Bush the First are the same as George Bush today in the White House. So we have the influence that George Bush the First had. If you recall, he's the first one to expose the New World Order.
Right.
Of course, we're in a new world order, he said.
Right. Of course, these ideas go back to Alice Bailey, you know, as an occultist back in the early 1900s. But he certainly is the one that popularized that term.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
The new world order is part of our national emblem.
Right.
Announcing the birth of the new world order.
Right. Novus Ordo Seclorum.
Right.
Okay, we've got Richard calling in here from Miami. Hi, Richard. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. I have a question for a guest.
All right.
The Jesuits have also been rumored to have been caused a lot of revolutions, et cetera, et cetera. I was wondering if there's a direct relationship, if they work together, the Jesuits and the Freemasons.
I cover that in Volume 3 of Scarlet and the Beast. The Jesuits, in their origin, were founded or created within the Catholic Church. But in South America, the revolutions in South America, the older revolutions and the modern revolutions, there is Jesuit involvement there, and many of those Jesuits are Masons in South America. In fact, they call the leader of the Jesuits the Black Pope. During Vatican II, the Black Pope at that time, forget his name, seemed like it was erupt or something like that. He was a Mason.
Well, of course, you're not supposed to be a Mason.
Right.
Isn't it more that the Masons have infiltrated the Jesuits and are using that the secrecy
absolutely.
Of the order
that,
for their own
you
purposes?
You got it right. They have infiltrated the Catholic Church through the Jesuits. Yeah.
And that is, of course, what's happened. That traditionally, the Catholic Church was the target of the Masons, and of course, rather than take it on in direct confrontation, they infiltrated it. And they're actually, if you listen to our 4-tape set, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, he talks about the Masonic influence within the Vatican itself today. But then, of course, it's within the Protestant Church, so let's not take on the Catholics as such. Anything else, Richard?
That's it. Thank you.
God bless you. Good to hear from you. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes before we have to let our listeners up in the Great Northwest go. And this is pretty heavy information you're getting this evening. But you need to study it. You need to find out. You need to realize how many of our modern-day presidents have been involved with Masonry and the occult. In fact, we know that they were having witches meetings in the White House when Hillary was there. She was inviting Jean Houston in. I think it was Jean Houston to conjure up the spirits of Eleanor Roosevelt and Mohandas Gandhi, and everybody thought that was funny. But then, of course, that was Hillary. But Nancy Reagan was also, contacting her astrologer on a regular basis.
That's true.
And of course, people don't like that because, of course, Ronald Reagan was a Republican. But, of course, the occultism has no respect for a political party. It infiltrates both wings. In fact, we're going to talk a lot more about that this next hour. I don't want to get off on some of the other subjects. But right now, of course, do you see a strong, strong occult influence in both political parties and in Washington, D.C. today?
Absolutely. You see the same name surfacing from one administration to the next, and they're members, if not of Freemasonry, Freemasonry's offshoots. You mentioned one while ago that was in California, and these... They just run in those circles.
Absolutely, and of course the difficulty is that these people at the upper echelons understand what the real goal is: the destruction of the Christian influence in America, replacing, of course, Christianity with a secular religion, and then the next paradigm shift goes over to the new religion. In other words, first from Christianity to atheism or humanism, and then from humanism to the worship of all gods. And, of course, an all-inclusive religion, which includes the Hindu and the Muslim. And it is not a faith in God, it's faith in faith. And when this happens, of course, God eventually moves against that nation because it's become a pagan nation. And there's no incident in all history where a nation is turned against the God of the Bible, where the God of the Bible is not eventually turned against that nation. And my fear is that unless the American people understand what this is all about, why we're going to lose this wonderful heritage of freedom under God that we inherited from generations past. Well, we're going to have to say goodbye to our listeners up in the Great Northwest and ask them to pray for America. Ask them to pray for revival. Ask them to pray for God's mercy, because if this country doesn't turn back to God, why, we are going to lose it. And then we ask you to pray for our ministers and for certainly our political leaders. And we ask you, of course, to remember my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be back with you on Monday with some more fascinating programs. We're looking forward to being with you. And, of course, until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty and coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest this evening is John Daniel. His book is Scarlet and the Beast. It's three volumes, and we have the second and third volumes, but not the first one. Although, do we have a four-tape set? Now, with my interviews with Mr. Daniel, which will give you a tremendous insight into what's going on. I think it's called A Masonry Beyond the Light. That's the name of the tape set. But, of course, Masonry plays a profound part in our society today and within our court system, within the political system, within the corporate system. And, of course, is it involved in banking today as well?
Absolutely. The banks, let's go to the banks first in Europe, South Africa, England. Most of the presidents of the banks, especially in London, England, all the presidents of the banks are Masons. In fact, in all the banks are Masonic lodges for the members or the employees of those banks. And in the United States, if you get the proper handshake, you're guaranteed a loan. I did that quite by accident at one time and got a loan and then realized what happened. But this whole United States operates on Freemasonry. You look at the big power brokers in our nation going back 100 years and the founders of great businesses in the United States, the Kresge Company, Hershey, Walmart, all of them were Masons. Now, they were good men, and they knew what they were doing in business. It's just that they had the opportunity to get funds and grow more rapidly and get the help with local governments easier than anyone else.
So Wendy's, I know the fellow who was...
Wendy's was a Mason.
And, of course, what happens if you want to get to the Planning Commission and the Planning Commissioner is a Mason, why, you're going to get the franchise or you're going to get the opportunity for a building permit that nobody else is going to get.
Sure.
And this is the way the system, unfortunately, does work today. So then, of course, do we see any of the, is there a Masonic influence within the media, within entertainment?
Yes. In fact, the three major news networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC, have as their symbol Masonic symbols. The sun and the triangle. At one time, CBS had the all-seeing eye inside the triangle rotating. This was back in the early 90s. It was subliminal. I can't say that word. But it was ironic. I think ABC has the sun disk, which is the all-seeing eye. So you see all of this when you understand what's going on.
Yes, they hide their symbols in plain sight, and people, of course, can't see them because they don't know what they're looking for. Well, CBS still has the eye there in the right lower quadrant. Which, of course, is a traditional cult sign. In fact, that was one of the signs of the Illuminati.
Yep.
And then, of course, this is one reason why people don't ever hear about this, is because so much is actually censored by the Masons. They don't want the American people to understand the influence of this all-powerful secret society and, of course, its ultimate goal of what's going on. Now, what about the morality of Masonry? I recall one of the pledges you take is you will not seduce the wife of a fellow Mason, but or a fellow Master Mason. But it doesn't say anything about not seducing somebody else's wife.
Well, the interesting about that particular oath they take, they will not seduce a brother Mason's wife knowing her to be such. So if they didn't know it was the brother Mason's wife, it's okay. So that it is a licentious, just like any of the pagan religions. It's based on licentiousness.
And I really think that the tragedy is that the average Mason gets into this. He may even think that he's a Christian, but of course, once he has sworn the oaths, really, these oaths do have a profound impact on people when they swear them, don't they?
Yes, in fact, it is a satanic binding. If you go into Zechariah chapters 4 and 5, it talks about the oath. If you look up the words in the Hebrew, I've done a study on that, and that's what I present in my seminar, my slide presentation. I go into Scripture and I show the pagan religions having the same symbols as Freemasonry today. And it's all throughout the Old Testament, specifically the all-seeing eye and the taking of oaths. And in Zechariah chapter 5, Zechariah writes that this is the curse that goes throughout the land, speaking specifically of the oath.
And of course, we're told in the Holy Scriptures not to take these oaths.
Right. Right, because when we take, if you look at that particular scripture, I think it's in one of the Gospels and in one of the epistles, it puts us in an inferior position. That's what it says in the Greek. When you take these oaths, you're put in an inferior position. And that's what the deception is. You take the oath before you know what you're taking it for. In all Masonic lodges, you take the oath first. And then they tell you what you can and cannot do and what they are. So that's why you're put in an inferior position, because you don't know what you're taking the oath for.
And I really think that's so significant. The average Mason, when he goes in, he takes the oaths for the first, second, and third degree, which, of course, makes him a master Mason. But he, and this is what I think they refer to as the Blue Lodge, and he takes these, he swears these oaths, but he has no idea what the significance of the whole thing is. And then, of course, they tell him things, and they lie to him. In fact, they even brag about in Morals and Dogma of actually lying to him.
Yes. They intentionally deceive. That's what Albert Pike says in Morals and Dogma. He says, we intentionally deceive them, and it is impossible to undeceive them.
In other words, they believe what they believe, even though it's a lie. And then,
right,
of course, when they get to the higher levels of Masonry, then, of course, they tell them what these things really mean. And by that time, of course, they become so depraved that they will embrace the dark side.
Well, one of the things they play on is the partiality in Freemasonry. You're guaranteed advancement in whatever you're doing in life. And so it becomes kind of a greedy situation. If I'm looking for a raise and I'm a Mason, I'll get the raise. If I'm looking for a promotion, the Mason's going to get it first. If I'm looking for a loan, it's easier to get a loan if I'm a Mason. All of these things, so it's a partiality thing. So it is, if I want to get ahead in this world, if I want to be wealthy, then in the eyes of a secular world, that's a good thing.
Well, now, it used to be this was very important in the police, and certainly we know it was very important within the FBI because of J. Edgar Hoover was a 33rd degree Mason.
Yes.
What about the police, FBI, and certainly the military today? Are they still strongly influenced by Masonic advancement?
Yes, they are, and the only way that that I can say this, and I don't know that it is Masonic, but the Fraternal Order of Police is operated, if it is not a Masonic lodge in the police force, it is operated just like that. They protect each other. And they will not speak against each other. So the Fraternal Order of Police, they call it a lodge. Now, whether it's a Masonic lodge or not, I haven't been able to document that. I've had pros and cons on that.
All right, fine. So we find this infiltrating every aspect of modern-day society. And, of course, my concern, John, is that how can we have a free society when we have secret societies operating operating secretly within it, and the fact there is not probably 1 in 100 Americans who really understands the significance of anything you're saying tonight?
That's true, because it's kept out of our history books. Our history books tell strictly what the powers to be want us to know. When all the revolutions of Europe, including our own revolution, was a Masonic revolution. In fact, the word terrorism was coined as a result of the French Revolution. The reign of terror in 1793, and the word terrorism was coined because of that in 1795. So all the revolutions of Europe, kicking the kings off the throne and starting the democracies and our own revolution, was backed by Freemasonry.
Well, a caller just came in and wants to know about the Knights of Columbus. Is there a Masonic influence there, or is that a straightforward Catholic organization?
A straightforward Catholic. It doesn't have any Masonic influence. In fact, it was founded to have a place where the Catholic men, males, could unite and join and meet in fellowship so that they would not join Freemasonry.
And I think that that's a pretty straightforward answer, and I hope that satisfies our listener. And there are still a few organizations that talk about Masonry. At least some of the Catholics talk about it. I have never heard this discussed in a Protestant church. In fact, I've gone to Protestant churches, and they put on these big conferences on cults, you know, and they'll talk about the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Masons, but they'll never mention. Pardon me, they talk about the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons, but they'll never mention the Masons.
Let me tell you something interesting. A real good friend of mine, a professor here in town, is a youth minister. He teaches in a Christian college here in town. He is also a youth pastor, and he's a prolific writer on youth magazines and books. He's written about 20 books. And he was contracted by one of the Christian publishers to write on the religions of the world for youth, so that youth would understand it. And so they gave him all the religions that he was to write on. They left out Freemasonry, and he asked about that. He said, no, we don't want to touch that. So he wrote this book of all the religions and was forbidden by this Christian publishing company to write on Freemasonry.
Well, you know, it's really so interesting. I mean, I belong to conservatives, various conservative groups for many years. And it really wasn't until, the mid-1980s, that I suddenly began to understand the implications of Freemasonry. And why didn't any of the leadership ever tell us? Well, I suspect that maybe some of the leadership was created not to reveal but to conceal the truth from the people who were looking for answers.
I don't know if you remember in the early 90s when the Catholic Church had this uproar within its ranks on condemning Freemasonry, and one of the New Age magazines that came out, which is a Masonic publication, incidentally, threatened the Southern Baptist Convention. Said, if you pursue this avenue in the Southern Baptist Convention, we will pull out of the Gideons and bury it. So the Masons are saying, we fund the Gideons with that statement.
And I'm sure they do, and that's, of course, the great tragedy of our time. And
giving out the Bibles is a great thing. But you got to understand that Masons are working their way to heaven. And so any religious book that they give away, they think it's putting points on their side to get to heaven.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things is at the funeral program that is put on for Masons, They talk about, and at least I've read this in some of John Ankerberg's material, they talk about how you're going to stand before the Great White Throne.
Yes.
Or the Great White Throne of Judgment.
Yes.
Would you like to discuss that? Because, you know, for the average Mason, that sounds like, boy, this is where I'm going to get my reward for what I've done. But what's the significance of that in the Masonic funeral oration?
Well, let me tell you what the Masons think about the Great White Throne, and then you would understand that. Every Mason from the first degree receives an apron, and that pure white apron is really a play on the apron that Adam and Eve wove to cover their nakedness. It's representative of works. And in that very first degree, and in each degree I understand, as this pure white apron, as this apron is pure white, so your works will be at the Great White Throne Judgment. Now, the interesting thing about the Great White Throne Judgment, that's where the wicked are tried.
That's the judgment of the damned, if you've read the
book.
Yeah,
that's where they're
Revelation.
Tried and damned, and Christ, and in the book of Matthew, didn't we do good works in your name? Didn't we do this in your name? And Jesus says, I never knew you. Depart from me, you wicked servant. And so this, the Great White Throne Judgment is not for Christians at all. This is for the wicked. Yet this is the oath they take in the Masonic Lodge. When you stand before God in that Great White Throne Judgment, let your works be as pure as this white apron.
Oh, now, is that actually a part of the ritual that they actually speak?
Yes, that's in some of the books that I have. That's part of the ritual they give. I think it's on the first degree when they receive that apron.
All right, fine. Well, I found that in some of Ankerberg's work, and I was trying to get the documentation. I thought it was in Morals and Dogma. Somebody pointed out it wasn't, and I had to go in Morals and Dogma, and sure enough, I couldn't find it there. So that we were able to track it down, at least in the funeral oration. All right. Well, now, of course, if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to talk to Mr. Daniel, he certainly is one of the nation's leading experts on this subject. Our telephone number, 464-8295, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. What is the relationship between Masonry and Theosophy?
Okay, Masonry and Theosophy. Theosophy was founded by a woman. Her name just slipped my mind.
Madame Helena Prokofievna Blavatsky.
Yeah, Madame Blavatsky. She was a female Mason. She fought with Garibaldi in the Italian Revolution. Garibaldi was a 33rd degree Mason, and she fought alongside of him, and she was left wounded to die on the battlefield and recovered. But she founded... Blavatsky founded an order in the United States and then moved it to England. And that is basically where the modern New Age movement started. So she was back in the mid-1800s.
Well, you know, I think one of the most difficult things for any thinking person today would be to try to figure out where is Gorbachev coming from? I mean, why is Gorbachev hobnobbing with Stephen Rockefeller and Marie Strong, and why does he get all these special privileges, and why does he have such a good press, and he's just the ex-dictator of Russia.
Right.
And why is he talking about this new spirituality? We have somebody sent me a couple of pages out of a book written by James H. Billington, who we referred to earlier, the Librarian of Congress, saying, he was riding to the airport in Russia with one of the high officials who told him things were going pretty well here in Russia until Margaret Thatcher inducted Gorbachev into an English Masonic Lodge. Had you ever heard that?
I never heard that, but I did know he was a Mason. When he came from Russia, his first stop was in England, and he was initiated into English Freemasonry. A second stop was in France. He was initiated into the French Freemasonry. I didn't hear that it was the Queen of England.
No, it was Margaret Thatcher.
Margaret Thatcher. I didn't hear that, and very well could be. But he was definitely a Mason.
I don't know if it's true or not. I'm just saying what James H. Billington wrote that he had been told. And of course, it's a fascinating little bit of history that most Americans would never, never, never hear. And now we have, of course, the former dictator of Russia, the former head of the Soviet KGB, and we find out he's a Mason. One of the most disturbing things, I think, to most conservatives was the fact that Ronald Reagan became a 33rd degree Mason, never went through the lodges. But is that true, that he accepted the 33rd degree when he was in the White House?
Well, my documentation states, and I can't quote the source right now, that he was a 32nd degree Mason when he went in.
Okay.
And he was initiated the 33rd degree, and the reason he was initiated, he said he was not going to raise taxes, and there was something came up that he did raise taxes, and they initiated him 33rd degree in the White House.
And I think that the average, I know he became a 33rd degree, I didn't realize he was 32nd, I thought maybe it was just honorary, but it's so important people understand.
Well, the 33rd degree is an honorary degree.
Right, that things are never quite as we have been led to believe. Now, what about the upper degrees beyond the 33rd degree, the degrees that most Masons don't even know exist? People like Aleister Crowley write about them. He said he was, of course, a Mason for 12 years before he was invited to go to the upper levels. But what are these levels above the 33rd degree?
These are English, and it's not in English Freemasonry or French Freemasonry. It's in Mizraim Freemasonry, which is Egyptian. And they go up to, as far as I know, 90 degrees, and then some say they go even higher than that. But that is the real hardcore modern New Age movement, the drug dealers and Aleister Crowley, you know, human sacrifice. Hitler joined one of those lodges, was initiated before he ever came to power, was initiated in the Golden Dawn.
No, that was the Golden Dawn. Was that Crowley's group?
Yes,
Crowley's group. Right.
Yeah.
All right. Now, what about the Bohemian Grove? One of our friends actually got into the Bohemian Grove and took pictures of the rites there, where you've got these leaders. I mean, here, the President of the United States, Secretary of State, they're all up there, and some of these people are putting on purple robes and chanting, and you know, they have a vain sacrifice before a 40-foot stone owl. Is there any tie-in between the Bohemian Grove and these organizations we're talking about?
Yes, Bohemian Grove is Templar Freemasonry. The same rituals are performed in French Freemasonry in France, where they beat on wood and so forth and so on. Who was the late president of France, 1992.
Mitterrand?
Yes. He used to go annually in October, I believe it was, to a certain hill in France and chant and beat on the trees. And the Bohemian Grove, same thing.
All right, fine. And Christian, there's so many of these organizations. The Druids, for instance, over in England are fit into the same sort of cult worship. Well, right now we've got Mike calling in. Incidentally, our telephone number here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, or out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you have any questions, a wonderful time to ask them. Mike, how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, good, Stan. this is not my original reason for calling, but your guest was talking about the trees and the Grovers. You know, so many of our extreme left-wingers who enjoy hugging trees, I think, don't seem to realize that they're following the philosophies of the extreme, well, how do you do this? The right-wingers, who are also hugging trees. The people your guest was just describing would fit within the realm of the ultra-conservative or the ultra-right wing or everybody who the left wing has disgust for. They're hugging trees, and they have these philosophies for hugging trees, and the Wiccans and whoever, lefties, have the same philosophies, and they hug their trees.
All right, fine. Well, of course, the thing is that they somehow feel that this is a living thing, without understanding that the roots of all of this is in paganism.
Yeah,
the source of our strength is not in the strength of the tree. It's in the Lord Jesus Christ.
Yeah. That's nothing more than nature worship. It's the old nature worship, worshiping the sun, moon, and stars, and all of creation.
Pantheism, you might call it.
Right.
Yeah. Anything else, Mike?
Well, yeah. Well, a lot. But I have to finish this little thing by saying the left doesn't have any idea how well it is aligned with the right, which they hate.
I know. Well, I mean, a lot of them are wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people.
Yeah.
I will say one thing for them. At least they're willing to do something and be involved. What I really can't stand are the people who don't care enough about anything to be involved with anything. I have a lot more respect for a leftist who's involved in working, even if he's wrong, than for the person who has no belief in anything.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask your guest, since he has so much awareness of the activities of so many weirdo groups like the Masons and Rosy Cross types and Rosicrucians, etc., what does he know about their use of sodomy and its utility in the raising of occult awareness?
I deal with that in Volume 1 of Scarlet and the Beast, and it's in the appendix. That's the book that is out of date, but I will answer your question. I document in the United States and in England two different cases. One case in England where a father had sex with his daughter. He gave the grand hailing sign, and the judge let him go and didn't let him go. Stop.
Which kind of sex?
That's bringing your hands up.
No. I think he wanted to know if this was a sodomy or just a
usual.
Well, it's a father that had sex with his daughter.
Right. Okay.
And when he gave the grand hailing sign, the judge dismissed the case. I mean,
okay. That way, we know which kind of sex it was.
Yeah. And then here in the United States, I document where a demolé, which is the teenage entry into Freemasonry, sodomized a young boy in the demolés, and the parents took him to court, and the judge kicked that out of court.
So we've got real problems there. Okay, anything else, Mike?
Well, maybe I'll call back later.
Okay, fine. Thanks so much. And our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Of course, there's always the story of Jack the Ripper. And there are many, many people who believe, of course, this was a manifestation of a Masonic crime covered up, of course, by the Masons because there were Masonic symbols left at several of the murder sites. Have you looked into that at all? Is there any truth to that? Is that an old wives' story?
I deal with that, I think, in Volume 3 of Scarlet and the Beast. I tell the story of who was behind Jack the Ripper. The Queen, I think it was Queen Victoria at the time, her son was about ready to marry a commoner. And Jack the Ripper were three people, actually. It was the royal coachman. It was the husband of the queen, and the doctor, the physician, that played the part of Jack the Ripper. I mean, Jack the Ripper was just the tale that was told. But they were trying to find this woman that the queen's son was going to marry. And they found her and butchered her. And meanwhile, they butchered about seven of her friends until they found her. She was arrested. She wasn't butchered. She was arrested and put in prison and died in prison in 1927.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment with special guest John Daniel. And if you have any questions, remember our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that many of you will decide that you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, because that's how we're able to do what we do as we reach out across America, and we're pretty close to 50 different outlets across America, including our internet, shortwave, radio station, satellite. But, of course, this is all a big undertaking. We have done what we've done because we believe it's so important to reach the American people that, quite frankly, we need your help to accomplish what we've undertaken. So if you believe there's a problem, if you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, why, we hope that many of you will decide right tonight you're going to join the Radio Liberty family. And if you'd like to, why, of course, you can reach us by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV, or if you'd like to get a copy of our newsletter, why, you can do that. We'd be glad to send you free of charge a newsletter. If you call us at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, our latest newsletter deals, of course, with vaccinations. And, of course, the reason this is important is because legislation is being passed all across America to force Americans to be vaccinated. And you say, well, gee, I took vaccinations when I was young, and I'm pretty healthy, and that is true. But you have to understand that vaccines have been used to create sterility and disease in a significant number. Almost a third of the young men we sent to Vietnam, the Gulf War, took the vaccines and, of course, are seriously ill today. And an inordinate number of them have died. And you're not hearing this because, of course, the last thing they want the American people to know is that there is a relationship between vaccines and death. Of the young men, homosexuals, who volunteered to take the hepatitis B vaccine in the 1970s, late 1970s, the last figure we had, about 78% of them came down with AIDS, whereas in the general population of homosexuals and promiscuous homosexuals, the incidence of disease was less than half that. Why do you think that was? Ladies and gentlemen, it's important you get the answers to these questions. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. America truly is under attack today. So again, our number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Our website is certainly radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. You can help us by telling others about the program. Get them started listening. Encourage them to go to the website, pull down our newsletters, pull down our programs there, which are archived. And, of course, they can get our other programs on the Internet. We have people listening all across America every night on the Internet. We just need an awful lot more people listening and reach as many people as we can with the truth in the time that God allots us. So we'll be back in just a moment with Mr. John Daniel, and we'll welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, one of the things I was really fascinated in your book was the discussion of B'nai B'rith and, of course, the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League. Both of these organizations always are on the wrong side of every issue. They're always attacking Christians. And, of course, it is because of their staunch anti-Christian attitude. Everybody, of course, attacks them as being Jewish, and Jews are anti-Christian. But really, this is a strong Masonic influence within those organizations, isn't it?
Yes. The B'nai B'rith was founded in 1843 because back then Jews couldn't join Freemasonry, and so they joined. So they created their own lodge, and this was helped by Albert Pike. He was instrumental in founding the B'nai B'rith. The interesting thing is, I subscribed to the Jerusalem Post, and about 10 years ago, they had an article on the B'nai B'rith, and called it a Jewish lodge. They didn't say Masonic, but they called it the Jewish Lodge.
Okay, and how about the Anti-Defamation League?
That is the terrorist arm of the B'nai B'rith. In fact, for the first time, our government recognized the B'nai B'rith as terrorist. And the leader of the B'nai B'rith, I think, was arrested in California for throwing paint on one of the mosques just recently, you know, within the past year. And but that's about as far as I heard anything about that.
Well, of course, you wouldn't expect that we'd broadcast far and wide across our society. Well, I think it's really so vitally important that people understand that, of course, this has nothing to do with being Jewish at all. It has to do with having joined these occult organizations. And really it is this occult influence in every aspect of our lives, whether it be in the Protestant Church, whether it be in the Catholic Church, or whether it be in the Jewish religion that, of course, is responsible for our troubles, not having anything to do with Protestants, Catholics, or Jews, but it is the occult people who have embraced, or the people who have embraced these occult religions that, of course, are creating all the problems. Would that be a fair statement?
That's true. And of course, they promote themselves in whatever country they're in. They promote themselves as being of the religion of that country, and they really aren't. You know, it's all a farce. It's a face. They are a secret society, a pagan religion.
Well, now, what about the influence of Masonry in Europe today? Is this still a very, very powerful force there? And is this primarily the Grand Orient that exists in Europe?
Well, it is still a strong force today. In 1992-93, he was Chinese. His last name was Pei, P-E-I, something like that. Built a glass pyramid in the courtyard of the ancient castle in Paris, and it was paid for by the Masonic Lodge in Paris, the erection of it. So it still has a great influence in politics in Europe today, absolutely.
Now, what about this P2 Lodge that existed in Italy some years ago and was involved in this great scandal that involved the finances of the Catholic Church?
The P1, let's start with the P1 Lodge.
All right, fine.
The P1 Lodge was a spinoff of Italian Freemasonry. Mazzini founded the P1 Lodge in 1830, and it was the terrorist arm of Italian Freemasonry to win the revolution in Italy. P2 is also Italian, and it was created, or I should say founded, in the 1950s, early 1960s, for the same reason P1 was founded, and that was to fund the terrorist activity that was going on in Europe throughout the late 70s and 1980s, especially in Italy, Germany, and France. And so P2 was nothing more than the terrorist arm of French Freemasonry.
And what was the relationship then to the banking scandal?
Okay, in what nation? When?
In Italy, wasn't there a banking scandal,
okay.
Vatican banking scandal?
Okay, I got what you're talking
right.
About now, yes. French, or I should say Italian Freemasonry had infiltrated the Vatican, and when the Pope, in 1978, the Pope that lasted 33 days, he discovered that 33, interesting number, that 22 of his bishops and priests were members of the Propaganda II Masonic Lodge. That's what P2 is. And they were funding their operation through the Vatican Bank.
Really? Is that why he died so mysteriously?
Right. There was a book written that the documentation on it was so good, and I can't think.
Is that the Vatican Assassins?
Nope, that wasn't it. But it was so well documented that he was, in fact, he was killed by Digitalis. Now, that particular pope had heart problems. Interestingly, Digitalis was created by a 33rd degree Mason right here in the United States to help heart disease. But he took an overdose of Digitalis. And that's what killed him. He brought a heart attack on. And it was 33 days after he was in office. But he discovered that 22 of his Vatican priests were members of Propaganda II. And the next day, he was going to fire them. He was going to release them. One of them was Marcinkus, who was the president of the Vatican Bank. And he's still there today.
Well, Chris, I think he's the pope who said... you know, the smoke of Satan is circulating above the Vatican. And that phrase has been used by others, but most people don't understand its significance.
Right.
And, of course, he was a good man. I think he tried to do what was right.
Yeah.
But, of course, if you stand up against the occult influence in the Vatican today, and even if you're the Pope, why, you don't live very long.
That's right.
And that is so incredible. People say, that can't be going on. Why, if it was going on, why, you know, we'd hear about it. Barbara Waller or Dan Rather or Tom Brokaw would tell us, but I'm afraid they're not about to. Maybe they don't know.
Well, Dan Rather in 1987 had a two-hour documentary on the Propaganda II Lodge.
Did he really?
Yeah, he didn't say it was Freemasonry, though.
Okay. Now, one of the things that, things that's often quoted today is a letter that went from Mazzini, who was an Italian Mason and headed the Carabinieri and other Italian secret societies, to Albert Pike, who was the father of a modern day of the Scottish Rite Masonry. Now, this is, I don't know if the letter is real or not, but this is the one where they talk about the necessity for three world wars. Have you ever been able to document that in any way?
Yeah, that was supposed to be, the letter was supposed to have been in a library, protected, encased in glass, and Reverend Church read that letter. It's mysteriously disappeared now. But the letter supposedly was written in the late 1800s, where Mazzini, Pike, and Palmerston, Lord Palmerston of England, planned three world wars.
Well, now, of course, the thing is that I thought it was supposed to be in the British Museum. Do you remember where it was?
Yeah, British Museum.
Okay, fine. Yeah. Because I know when I went there some years ago, about 1980, and I wanted to get the copy of Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope. I just wondered if they had it there. And they had it listed, but no call number. And, of course, when I went to the desk there at the inner sanctum of the British Museum, I said, you know, how do I get the book without a call number? And the woman said, I've never seen a book that didn't have a call number. So, obviously, somebody is even censoring things at the British Museum.
Well, the interesting thing about that, in this supposed letter, that these three men communicate with each other to bring about three world wars. They explained how they would start World War I, World War II. Now, this letter supposedly was written in the 1800s. And they said, then we will cause Nazism to rise and trigger World War II. Well, there was no word Nazi or Nazism at that time. So I believe that letter was completely phony, written after the fact.
It may very well have been. So this is the thing. I just wondered if you had any information on it. And, you know, I'm not about to give it any authenticity without more information on it.
Yeah, I think from best research, it was written after World War II in 1949.
Well, there are a lot of things that are written out there that I think are written specifically to discredit. One of the things is supposedly the instructions of Pike to the 33rd 32nd degree Mason saying, you know, every 32nd degree Mason, I think it is, will know that we're Luciferian. And I don't think that every 32nd degree Mason knows that. And I think it was even for young, much lower degrees than that. Have you, do you know the quotation I'm talking about?
Yes. I quote that in my book. And English Freemasonry does not discount that quote, interestingly. Masons in the United States discount the quote. The quote was first written by a French author, a female French author. But English Freemasonry doesn't discredit it. They say that when Pike wrote it, he was a little dotty. In other words, out of his mind.
All right, fine. And what degree was it supposed to be that they learned about the Luciferian nature of
32nd degree? You're allowed to tell it. The 33rd degree is allowed to tell it to. No, they're allowed to tell it to the 31st, and 32nd degree.
All right.
That their god is Lucifer.
Right. And yet, I've talked to 32nd degree Masons who come out of good Christians. There's one fellow said, I was 32nd degree Mason. I had no idea what it was all about,
yeah.
You know, until I began to study on my own. So nobody really told him. And this is sort of the way it is, isn't it? You're sort of supposed to stumble on this on your own.
Yeah, and what they do is they watch you closely as you go up the degrees. They watch you closely, and they teach you in the direction you're bent, according to the Masonic books. And if you're not really interested in researching the Masonic library and every Masonic lodge and in every state, if you're not interested in it, you stay third degree. But they watch the person. Now, everything that we're talking about here and all the books that we're talking about are in the Masonic Lodge. My books are in the New York Masonic Lodge library. They purchased them. And so anything that any Mason wants to find out about what Masonry is, they've got it by their own authors in their own libraries.
But, you know, you have to read so much to really get it. I think that the lectures in ancient philosophy by Manly P. Hall, his book, The Keys of Freemasonry.
Well, he says Lucifer is the god.
Lucifer, you'll have the seething energy of Lucifer in your hands.
Seething energies of Lucifer
right.
At your hands.
Right. And, ladies and gentlemen, these books are available. Of course, I quote many of them in my book, and certainly Mr. Daniel quotes them in his book. And I'm looking forward to getting Volume 1 back and made available, because I think it's an important thing for people to be able to read this and to really understand what's going on. And unless we understand the influence of Masonry and the occult in modern-day society, you can't understand anything that's going on. We can't understand why we're going to war with Iraq. And, of course, why, the things that are happening today, why America is giving up its national sovereignty and moving towards world government. And this is really one of the goals of Masonry, isn't it, this idea of this one world government?
Absolutely. That's their goal from the very beginning, to bring to cast off the royalty and bring in a one world government under democracy.
And by democracy, they really mean that they will be in charge.
Well, the interesting thing, they call it democracy, but it is a republic, and that's how they're in charge. Pure democracy is anarchy. So we're talking about a democratic republic. We're not a democratic nation in the United States. We're a republic.
Well, we were a republic at one time, but of course,
yes, we were. You're exactly right.
But the republic that they want is the republic that Plato described, not the republic
Precisely.
That was established by our founding fathers. And you know, I think that the people should really read Morals and Dogma, where Albert Pike says, you know, we will control the rulers of the world. We will control the rulers of the world.
Well, our national emblem announcing the birth of the New World Order. That's what the whole United States was created for.
Well, don't you see that, or would you agree that when our country was founded, there were two forces. One was a Christian, one was a Masonic. Mm-hmm. And they were both here vying for power.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, I totally agree with it, but God had a hand in this.
Oh, of course he did. Well, yeah. God has a hand in everything.
Yeah. And this nation, my personal belief, this nation has been a mighty nation because of the church.
Right.
A recent statistic by a church denomination is that 95% of the Christian missionaries and Christian funding to missionaries have come from the United States of America. So that's why we're known as a Christian nation, but we were not founded a Christian nation.
Well, you know, one of my treatises I put out talking about these two forces in America, one the Christian, one the occult, and one of the leading writers, I won't mention his name, but he's certainly well known to every Christian in America, called me one morning. He said, I'd never thought of this before. I mean, these two parallel forces at work in America, one the Christian, one the occult.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, for a time, the Christian was dominant, but no longer today.
Well, according to the Masonic Lodge, 53 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence were Master Masons.
Right. Well, of course, wasn't this really because the only way that they could plot the revolution against the king and not immediately be identified and executed was to belong to a secret lodge?
Absolutely. And the Boston Lodge number one, the so-called Indian attack on the tea ship.
You're talking about the Boston Tea Party.
The Boston Tea right. Party were nothing more than Masons dressed up like Indians.
Right, then because
they came out of the lodge in Boston Lodge number one and boarded the ship.
And I think that's really what's little known is the real influence of the Masonic movement within America at that time. But then, how many of these people really understood, do you think, the spiritual implications of Masonry? How many of them were in it because this was a way of plotting a revolution?
Well, our founding fathers were not in Luciferian Freemasonry. They were in deistic Freemasonry. When I say Luciferian, it wasn't until 1785-86 that the Illuminati infiltrated American Freemasonry. At that time, there were 15 Illuminati lodges in the United States. And 3 months before President Washington died, John Adams exposed the Illuminati as being in American Freemasonry, and George Washington warned our nation against secret societies for that very fact.
In fact, we were able to get from the Library of Congress, in fact, with the help of James H. Billington's secretary, a copy of a document written probably 1802-1804 on the Clintonian Illuminati in the United States. No
yeah.
relationship to Bill Clinton, at least I don't think so, but
Governor Clinton
at that
yeah.
time. And we do offer that. It's totally unavailable any other place in the country. And it's on the, written back at this time. It came out of the Jefferson collection, and believe me, they did everything they could to keep us from getting a copy of it, but we did get a copy. So the Illuminati was alive and well here in 1802-1804. What was the relationship between Thomas Jefferson and the Illuminati?
Supposedly, Thomas Jefferson was a member of Illuminati Lodge in Virginia. At least he was accused of that by John Adams.
Right. But then, of course, he and Adams eventually ended up becoming the best of friends.
Yes. Yeah. Well, John Adams is accredited to the founding of about 7 Masonic lodges in New England.
Right. Well, of course, Adams was certainly opposed the influence of the Illuminati in them, didn't he?
Yes. Yes, he did. He was opposed to that, and then he accused Jefferson, kind of a warning accusation. Jefferson of being a member of the Illuminati Lodge.
Well, of course, you know, one of the things was that Jefferson welcomed Thomas Paine into the White House after he returned from England. He, of course, had left America shortly after the Revolution, gone to France. almost got himself killed over there. And, of course, then he came to England, then he came back to America. But, of course, because he had written the book, The Age of, was it The Age of Reason? Yeah, The Age of Reason.
Right.
Why, of course, he was totally discredited in America. And because if you ever want to read a book that aimed at destroying Christianity, that is the book.
Well, Thomas Paine himself was a member of Grand Orient Freemasonry.
He was. Now, I've always wondered where, I've always felt he was a Mason, but he was a Grand Orient.
He was a member of Grand Orient Freemasonry in England. See, Grand Orient Freemasonry was founded in France, but he joined Grand Orient Freemasonry in one of his trips from France to England before he came to the United States.
That's really so fascinating because, you know, one of my interests has always been the Georgia Guidestones. And there, just outside of Elberton, Georgia, are these granite monuments. They call it the Georgia Guidestones, the American Stonehenge. But written on the capstone in four different languages, classical Greek, hieroglyphic Sanskrit, and Babylonian cuneiform, is let these be guidestones to the age of reason.
Yep.
Well, of course, that term "Age of Reason" smacked of Thomas Paine, and
sure.
And then, of course, I found a book written by the man who was responsible for the Guidestones, and of course, it's so obvious that it all evolves around Thomas Paine, and so, of course, then we can begin to identify this whole movement with the Grand Orient. And it's called significant.
Tie it all in together when you know the facts.
Well, of course, there are all these little bits. You've got to have a lot of facts to connect the dots. We've got a lot of dots, and I hope this evening for our listeners out across America, we've actually filled in a lot of those lines for you between the dots. We're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological battlefield, and certainly one of the great sources of information is John Daniel, and you'll certainly want to seriously consider getting his full set of books when they're available, or we do have volumes 2 and volumes 3, and volume 1 will be hopefully available. How soon in next year?
Well, we're thinking about the spring. The problem with that large a book, the paper cost has doubled and tripled since we first printed the book. And that's what held us back from reprinting the book, is the astronomical cost of it to print it. I mean, you can't sell a book for $80. Very few people are going to buy it. But there's this is an interesting phenomenon. Used books of Volume 1 of Scarlet and the Beast are selling for over $200 now.
we found one and we put it out recently. I wish I'd known that. No,
yes.
We wouldn't. Our job is to get information out.
Yeah, there's a group, Amazon.com are asking for used books, and they will purchase it based upon the quality. But the Albionic Research is advertised out of Detroit. Is advertising used copies for $200 plus.
All right, fine. Well, of course, we're not selling used copies, and we'll look forward to when it becomes
available. We hope to reprint it next spring.
All right, well, thank you so very much. Our guest has been John Daniel, and always a pleasure having you with us. Thank you so much for being here, and we'll look forward to having you again in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, just give me a call.
Good night. God bless you.
Good night.
Okay, fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed the program, and we want you to understand how this all fits together and what a great source of information. I hope you've enjoyed the program as much as I've enjoyed it tonight. And so remember to pray for America. Pray for God's mercy on this country and pray that we will not have dramatic problems as a direct result of the coming war with Iraq. And then lastly, of course, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Christian, your husband didn't get any fish.
Oh.